This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Our man Matt George will be covering full Intercom this weekend as the high school playoffs continue to roll along. Matt, happy to have you here with us. Of course, Matt does great work over at ABC 10 and the Locked On Kings podcast, where you talked to Katie Christensen recently, and I got to admit, beautifully titled, said the best is yet to come for the Sacramento Kings. And I said, okay, let me see what these two are talking about. What were the big takeaways from your conversation with Katie?
First off, she's phenomenal, and to be able to have her on the podcast is fantastic. But basically, we just discussed reincorporating almost the reinforcements, right? And we learned today that DeMar DeRozan is playing on Friday, right? My expectation is that DeMontis Sabonis is playing on Friday. Guys, I wouldn't be shocked either if Malik Monk is playing on Friday. But Malik's the biggest question mark out of all of them. But I'd be pretty surprised if DeRozan and Sabonis weren't both playing for the Kings in the Intuit Dome tomorrow night. But what we've seen out of the Sacramento Kings, granted they were 2-2 over the last four games, but what we've seen out of the Sacramento Kings over the last four games is I think the offensive pace has been as good as it's been all season long. And incorporating DeMar DeRozan into that to find a balance between when to turn to him for the isolation, slow it down, get to the foul line scoring, and when to zip the ball around the perimeter, or when to have Fox get downhill. Like, finding that balance is going to be really, really important. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the main things I think that Katie and I focused on in that conversation. Was the best is yet to come for the Sacramento Kings, because we already saw how good offensively they could be at full strength. And that was before Mike had as good of an idea about his second unit as I feel he has right now. I feel like he has a much better idea of Trey Lyles and Jordan McLaughlin and Keon Ellis, and when to use these guys, where to use these guys. I think he's discovering what's most important for everybody, which is consistency. Like, you can't expect consistency from Lyles, Keon, McLaughlin, all these guys off the bench if you're not giving them consistent playing time and you're not giving them consistent rotations that they're a part of and times where they know they're coming into the game, right? De'Aaron Fox knows he's going to be the first guy off the floor every single game, right? That's Mike Brown's rotation. So Fox knows when he's coming out. Fox knows when he's coming back in. He can kind of prepare himself for that. Malik Monk is the only guy off the bench that I feel knew and knows when he's coming in and when he's going out. Everybody has been kind of wishy-washy all season. So the best is yet to come, because in my opinion, the Kings have a better idea of what to do with their depth. They're getting their depth back, period, with stars returning. And there's no reason why De'Aaron Fox can't continue to play the same way. I'm not talking about scoring 60 points and 49 points, because points are going to be tough when you got 20 points per game and 18 points per game coming back in Sabonis and DeRozan. Mm-hmm. But De'Aaron can continue to play the same way by getting downhill, touching the paint, drawing the defense in. In theory, it should be even easier with someone like DeRozan out there with him, or it should lead to more open looks for DeMar DeRozan. Mm-hmm. So the best is yet to come, because this Kings team has already looked solid when they're all together, and they still have things to figure out and weren't playing their best basketball. And in a way, I think they can turn the early season injuries into a positive as long as they learn from them.
Yeah, I feel the same way. You know, you laid it out perfectly. A little bit of a blessing in disguise with the injuries, and it could help you get to where you're trying to go a little faster here, because you were able to get Trey Lyles maybe more minutes than he normally would if those guys were, you know, available. And, you know, it looked like he's starting to feel like himself, starting to feel like the Trey Lyles that we know and love. Then you got a guy like Orlando Robinson, who, you know, was kind of thrust into the action. Like, oh, okay, he's kind of nice. We might be able to, you know, do something with him. Maybe he gets into the rotation now, and Jordan getting reps, and even Keon maybe starting to get out of his early slumps. So the fact that those guys were injured, obviously, you know, it hurt not having them for a few games. But if you were able to gain a Trey Lyles, so to speak, or gain a Keon Ellis or an Orlando Robinson, it may be something that at the end of the day makes you a better team, ironically.
And I think offensively, I know the Kings were heavily reliant on Fox, but the Kings also proved a couple things to themselves. I think they proved that they can still run an effective offense when DeMontis Sabonis isn't on the floor. Is it the best version of itself? No. But what we were seeing to start the season is when Sabonis would sub out for the 10 to maximum 12 minutes a night that he wasn't playing, the Kings kind of fell off a cliff, because they didn't really have anybody else. No disrespect to Alex Len. Orlando Robinson wasn't available. Trey Lyles was coming back from his injury and still trying to figure things out. So I think the Kings kind of were two teams. They were Jekyll and Hyde, and the Hyde was when DeMontis Sabonis came off the floor. So I think the Kings learned a little bit of, okay, how do we score? How do we run an effective offense when Sabonis is off the floor? Okay, we have to run heavily through a top guy. So that's mainly De'Aaron Fox. Can be DeMar DeRozan too. Could even be to Malik Monk to some extent. Mm-hmm. And I also think, guys, we learned a negative lesson from these 3-4 games that DeRozan and Sabonis has been out. And that's, I hate to say it because he's my boy, Keegan Murray's not ready for a primary scoring role. Mm. He's not. And it's not just because he's struggling to shoot the basketball. And look, I have faith that he's going to be able to knock down shots. It's that he's not even comfortable getting the looks that he wants to get. Like, I thought he tried a number of times to attack on in both the Utah game and the most recent game, which I'm blanking
Atlanta.
Who they played. Atlanta, thank you. Mm-hmm. There were a number of times where he tried to attack, tried to put the ball on the floor, tried to get somewhere and get the spots, and he ended up having to dribble and backpedal out of it and look for help. Right? He just does not look comfortable enough yet as a go-to scoring option. That doesn't mean he won't have 20-plus point nights or even 30-plus point nights to help the Sacramento Kings at times, and that doesn't mean the Kings can't rely on him for big scoring nights every once in a while. But I think what we've learned is this is why the Kings felt the need to go out and get another isolation go-to scorer like a DeMar DeRozan, because while Keegan is extremely gifted on the offensive end shooting the basketball, mm-hmm. and while I do believe he can get better than what he's shown scoring off the dribble, and of course we know what he's doing defensively and rebounding the basketball, I think overall we've seen that Keegan isn't quite effective enough yet as a either Fox is hurt or Fox doesn't have it or Fox is getting double teamed. Keegan, go out and create for us and get us a bucket. I just don't think Keegan's ready for that yet. And I think we learned that from these injured games.
So it helped me. I want to make sure I understand this. One, you are now on the Kenny Caraway train of trading Keegan Murray, which is
don't do that. Wow. Don't wow. do that. That's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, don't do that.
That's crazy.
At all.
That's great. Well, Kenny's true, but me, that's not true.
Whoa.
That's a good call. Yeah, that's true. Trade machines nonsense.
That's true.
Don't be disrespectful.
That's true. Your concern is his ability to be the primary scorer when other guys aren't around. When it's like clearly, hey, you've got to be one of the ones to go out there and put this game on your shoulders.
You had two games in a row where he was the second best player on the team out of necessity because three of your top four guys were out. Mm-hmm. And in both of those games, he didn't look comfortable at all in any kind of primary scoring role to where the Kings needed Keon Ellis to hit 9 threes or De'Aaron Fox to go for 40 to 60 plus in order to get it. Like that's what you needed, because Keon just did not look comfortable and did not look ready and did not look like he didn't know how or where to get or how to get to the spot. And maybe it was just the way Atlanta was playing him defensively and Utah was playing him defensively. But there wasn't anything that I saw to these last two games from Keegan trying to score off the dribble that suggested like he knows how to get to where he wants to get to. I just don't think he's there yet. And that's fine, because it's still part of his game that he's incorporating. He's had some good moments throughout the season. He had a moment where I swear I was like, I had to blink to make sure it wasn't DeMar DeRozan, because he attacked the basket, kind of did a step back fader, missed the shot, but it was like James Hamm and I were sitting next to each other, and James was like, wow, that was nice. That looked good. Hmm. Like, we've seen flashes of it. You had two games But two games that were winnable. The Atlanta game, you just needed a little more outside of Fox and Keon hitting 9 threes, and Keegan didn't give it to you. And I think it's fair to be concerned about that. You're not hitting the panic button. You're certainly not talking about trading the guy like I've seen some people on social media. But that's why you brought DeMar DeRozan in. That's why you need Malik Monk, because those guys are guys that outside of Fox can just get you a bucket and play make.
Yeah.
Keegan's not there yet.
Hmm. Yeah, I was disappointed to see Keegan in really the game on Saturday, just not put up the shot attempts. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't have 25 points, that's one thing, but you can't have 6 field goal attempts in a game. And same thing on Monday, although, you know, maybe the foul trouble got to him a little bit or anything like that. But, you know, he's got to step that up. That I said it yesterday, I'll continue to say it. He's too good to have those type of moments. Much rather you go down in flames shooting 2 of 13 than 2 of 6.
But that's what I'm saying, Kenny. That's why that number, that's what stood out to me, is he was not able to get the shots off that he wanted to. He didn't look like he knew how to. He did not look like he knew how to get to the spot or how to break down a defense and get to that mid-range jumper if that was what he was looking for, or get to the rim, where statistically he's one of the most efficient finishers at the rim in the league this season. Yeah. But he doesn't get there enough for it to really matter as much. It's not like when De'Aaron Fox was one of the most effective finishers at the rim 2 seasons ago. Well, it's because De'Aaron can get there whenever he wants to. Keegan can't yet. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the 6-7 field goal attempts, that just speaks to Keegan didn't get the ball where he wanted to get to, and he wasn't trying to catch and shoot. The Kings aren't using him as just a catch and shoot threat anymore. So Keegan was trying to control his own offense, trying to create shots for himself. And he quite literally could not create even a good shot or a bad shot for himself. He wouldn't put it up.
Well, despite you now thinking Keegan Murray sucks,
stop that. I'm not going to come on the show anymore. That's me.
What was, with the guys being out, was there a particular player that stood out to you that maybe we hadn't really gotten to see? Obviously, you know, Trey kind of finding his legs a little bit, really helping over this last little stretch, which we all believe will continue now. But anything from like Orlando, Isaac, any of those guys that caught your attention?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Trey, because Trey was the big one. Trey just looks confident again, and he's going to be so important because we know he's an everyday rotation player. Mm-hmm. I think the way Keon's game against Atlanta started was not good. He missed a bunny at the rim and then turned the ball over, and we're like, oh god, he's struggling. And then all of a sudden, boom, he's 6 for 6 from 3-point range. It's like, what happened? Keon just exploded. So hopefully that gets Keon's confidence up a little bit. But we know with Keon, okay, even if he's not scoring, he does things right in other areas. He gets blocks, gets steals, he's an active defender. I thought Isaac Jones, when he played, looked good. And it's for realistic expectations, right? He had a couple of buckets. I think he had like 6 points in the Utah game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he looked like what the Kings need more of, which is Chatty House, behave yourselves. The length, the size, the athleticism was all there.
Wow. Okay.
It was all there.
For the gusto.
Settle down. You know what I'm talking about, you children. He looked like he gave the Kings size. He gave the Kings a wing. He gave the Kings a body. Like, he gave them what they needed to see. I can't talk basketball on this damn show.
No, you cannot. You can't talk much of anything. That's fine. That's fine. Yeah, cool off. It's fine. It happens. You could try. You could tell them not to react. They're going to react.
He has a wingspan, and he's tall, and he was athletic.
Okay.
There you go.
There you go. No, it's a sophomore class in here. It's fine. It's fine. I did like Orlando Robinson. I actually liked Isaac Jones, too. There were a couple of guys. I think Orlando will get, like, run, and I don't know if it's, like, I'd use the comparison to the Alex Lynn, JaVale McGee games last year. Like, I don't know that it's going to be Orlando or Alex Lynn. I'm not sure that Isaac Jones really works his way back into the rotation unless something happens. But I liked what I saw from both of those guys.
Orlando had one moment in particular that stood out to me, and I'll be honest with you, the rest of it I don't remember. He had a pick and pop moment where he hit a straightaway three. I think it was the Utah game where he set a screen. Whoever the ball carrier was attacked the basket. He stepped out, hit a three, no hesitation. Like, ooh, that was nice. Like that, because the Kings don't really have a center that can do that consistently. Sabonis kind of, but we know Sabonis' first instinct is to pass. Orlando was catch, no hesitation, put it up and hit the shot. So that was nice to see kind of some two-man game from a floor spacing five, because we know Alex Len doesn't. That's not Alex Len's game, and he doesn't necessarily do that. That's really all I remember about Orlando Robinson. I want to make sure I mention Jordan McLaughlin too, because I thought J-Mac was really solid over these games as well. And he's the one where I think Mike Brown figured the most out about as to when to use him and what he does well. And I think the Kings have identified that on offense, J-Mac is really good in the pick and roll. He's good in the pick and roll. He makes the right decisions. He gets downhill. He'll touch the paint. He won't necessarily finish at the rim the same way Fox or Malik do, but he'll touch the paint. He'll draw the defense in, and he seems to make the right pass, or he'll find his big man. So I think J-Mac on offense kind of found his groove. And then defensively, we know J-Mac's active and has good hands, so he'll get the job done on defense too. So I think Mike has probably a better understanding or idea of how J-Mac can fit into things on a nightly basis or semi-nightly basis. Once Malik comes back, reevaluate if he even gets into the game at that point. But until Malik gets back, if he's not back on Friday, I think Mike has a better confidence level of, okay, I can get 10 minutes of J-Mac here, and I think they're going to be effective minutes.
How do you have a different feeling about this Kings team after seeing them without DeRozan, Monk, and Sabonis, and the way they played? Obviously, De'Aaron Fox did his thing, but are you kind of, I don't know, maybe even more confident in them when these guys are coming back now? After seeing them, you know, be able to scrap out a win against Utah, and they went 1-2 in those games, but you know, they played well, and they'll be getting their guys back. Do you feel better about them?
I'm a lot more confident in the fact that the way last season ended, I don't think will repeat itself. Like if the Kings lose a couple of key guys down the stretch and they're in the hunt, I don't think we'll just wave the white flag, right? Or oh, the Kings are done. I don't think that's the case. I think what I learned the most is kind of going back to what we talked to at the beginning. Like I know Sabonis, I know Monk, I know how they fit in with this team. DeMar, I still think there is a balancing process of the playing with offensive pace and the ball moving and the ball having energy and, okay, DeMar, go out and get us a bucket. And I do think it's fair to say, and there's such negative connotation to this, it doesn't have to be a negative, it just can be an observation. I think the Kings were sometimes too over-reliant on DeRozan's shooting to start the season. I just felt like the Kings, maybe in an effort to incorporate DeRozan as well as they possibly could, I felt like they sometimes went away from their offensive style to give DeRozan the ball in the spots that he likes and let him go. They don't have to completely wean themselves off of it or say, DeRozan, you're not getting these shots anymore. He doesn't have to fall off a cliff in terms of shot attempts, or they don't have to go completely away from the isolation. But I think there's a time and place for everything, just like we talked about. If you're late in the shot clock, need to stop the bleeding on a run, or it's, of course, fourth quarter time, sure. Get DeRozan in isolation, let him go to work. But these other times, move the ball around, DHOs, Fox get downhill, and let DeMar play off of that. I think that balance is what I'm paying most attention to and what really stood out to me the most over these four games.
Talking about the balance in the offense, the balance on the floor, Matt, what about the balance with De'Aaron Fox? We obviously saw a hyper-aggressive De'Aaron Fox on Friday and Saturday, you know, to the tune of 109 points. Thought he had a really good game on Monday as well. But I think a lot of us have asked, now that he's kind of unlocked this, you know, this new feature that we wondered if he had but really wasn't sure if he did, obviously we don't expect him to go for 60 or 40 or something like that every night, but in terms of his level of aggression, how do we think that adjusts with the impending return of DeMar DeRozan and Domantas Sabonis?
Look, I'm not going to pretend to understand how much energy it takes to play the way that Fox has played over these last three games. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. And that's what Mike Brown tells us is, he goes, De'Aaron can do this anytime he wants, but it's hard to do it every single night. Like, De'Aaron knows he can go to it if he wants to, but De'Aaron has also told us, like, after the Minnesota game, he got to shoot around the next day and was like, God, I'm tired. And then he went out and dropped 40, 49. Mm-hmm. So seemingly not that tired. But look, 82 games, there's still a lot of season left, plus playoffs after that. Like, it's hard, and it doesn't matter how much money the guy's making. Like, physically, you get tired. It is hard to play that same way every single night. Mm-hmm. In theory, he can, him playing.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Black Friday has officially started at Blinds.com, and the savings are huge. Right now, you can save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure. Don't wait. These deals are happening right now. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results, and Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. With Blinds.com, there are no long lines or confusing quotes. You shop online without sacrificing quality, style, or service. One of our design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. Plus, you get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Blinds.com's Black Friday sales event is happening now with our best deals of the season. Save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That same way, though, with DeMar and Malik and everybody back should be easier because, guys, he took 35 shots, 30 shots, and then 23 shots over these last three games. Mm-hmm. He can still attack the paint, attack the basket, and only take 17 to 22 shots a game instead of having to even get close to the 30s. So in theory, he can continue to play the same way and exert the same energy without having to literally do it all like he's had to these last couple of games or few games. And the Kings should be fine. The Kings should be okay. And honestly, I think it's worth a conversation too of if Mike has to talk to De'Aaron and go, how do we get this energy from you, this aggression from you every single night? And if De'Aaron says, I'm too tired, I'm playing too many minutes, then I think it's more worth it for the Sacramento Kings to find out a way to reduce his minutes so he continues to play this way instead of have him continue to play high minutes but not at full effectiveness. Because we see how impossible he is to stop when he plays this way. And again, you add in weapons like DeRozan and Monk and Sabonis and Keegan and everybody else. Like, it should make everybody's life easier if Fox is playing this way and everybody should feed off of each other. So if Fox needs to go down to 34 minutes a game to play this way every single night, do it. And Fox will go into the 40s if it's an overtime game if he has to. He's shown the willingness to do that. But the Kings got to find a way to get this version of Fox every single night and make it as easy as possible for him. And I think we're already seeing that on the defensive end by having Keegan and Keon defend the opposing team's best guard.
We've asked this question a couple different times during the week, so you know we got to check in with Matt George. Did you ever think that this could be De'Aaron Fox, you know, scoring 60, scoring 49 the next game, and being a guy that is averaging close to 30 points per game? Did you ever see that for him in his career? I didn't. I thought he was going to be like a 23, 24 point per game scorer, and a really good ball player, but did you think that, you know, oh yeah, he can definitely be here?
I remember having conversations with people around Sacramento before he was drafted and soon after that he was drafted. And the conversation was, if he wants to get there, he has to add a 3-point shot. Mm. He's added a 3-point shot. Mm-hmm. If you're asking about coming into this season, 100%, I expected this is what he could be. And again, I feel it's what he has to be to accomplish his financial goal of a Supermax contract and making an all-NBA team. Like, this is what De'Aaron Fox, this is Supermax De'Aaron Fox. Not the 60 points or the 49 points. The unguardable, attacking the basket at will, doing whatever he wants, and there's nothing anybody can do to stop him. Because mm-hmm. shots aren't going to fall certain nights, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he was not missing that weekend that he had 109 points. He was mm-hmm. not missing. Everything he was putting up, he was hitting. He's going to have nights where he's getting to his spots, the shot's just not falling. It happens. Yeah. So, but the version of De'Aaron Fox that we've seen, which is like take no prisoners attitude, talk smack to the opposing team, even talk to the refs a little bit, that we call it like angry De'Aaron Fox, right? Hmm. That version of De'Aaron Fox is super max De'Aaron Fox. If he can be that on a nightly basis, he will get paid and the Kings will win more basketball games. If he can't, the Kings will still be good. But how good is good?
I'm concerned, Matt, that the only problem like with that idea about Supermax De'Aaron Fox is Supermax De'Aaron Fox has to be like 10-4 at this point in the season. Because I feel like even after that 109, I thought he got a lot of run on like Instagram and graphics and, you know, the Kobe comp. But we talked about like he made his appearance on NBA TV, but was ignored everywhere else. And I think part of that reason is the Kings lost the game to the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves snapping their losing streak round up becoming the story. And beating Utah isn't really that big of a deal, despite the fact how good De'Aaron Fox was. I'm concerned right now. Like, it's less De'Aaron's play that's going to get the people who will anoint him a supermax player, which isn't the Kings, it's the media, and it's the Sacramento Kings record.
That definitely has an impact on it. And I don't really have a good counter or response to that. I do think that excuse is a word that I can't say on the radio, because we know which people are responding. Suddenly people are tweeting about a Dyson Daniels defensive play when they haven't been tweeting about what De'Aaron Fox has been doing for two straight games before that. And even that game, he played well. His offensive night got overshadowed by Keon Ellis hitting 9 threes, and I don't think he cared at all. Mm-hmm. But like, we know the people that do and don't talk about him, and the people that typically don't talk about him, it has nothing to do with him and everything to do with the team that he plays for and the jersey that he wears and just this arrogance or pompous attitude of I just will not acknowledge them because I can't admit that I was wrong about something. And repeatedly am wrong about him and repeatedly am wrong about the team. So that's fine. I do think like media has a responsibility. And I say this as a totally biased media member, of course, with the Sacramento ties that I have. And I happen to work for a platform and be on a platform where I can lean into that a little bit. But if I had the responsibility of a voter that literally impacted the financial like had a financial impact on these players. Mm-hmm. Like if I have even a smidge of power of how much money somebody can make and how it impacts their livelihood, that's a responsibility that a lot of that some of these media members, I won't say a lot of them, some of these media members just straight up don't deserve. Mm. Right. And we've seen even from Fox and Sabonis missing the All-Star game last year. Fox, you could have made an argument for. Sabonis, there was no argument for that. There are financial ramifications to Sabonis not making an All-Star team. Mm. Thank God he ended up making All-NBA and they corrected that mistake to some extent. But a lot of people were actively against that decision. So there's no way that someone scoring 109 points in two games, which has only been done by Kobe and Wilt, that can be ignored or brushed under the rug in any kind of way, regardless of the result. I said on the podcast, some things are bigger than a win or a loss. Mm-hmm. Fox 100% would have rather won the game, and he said it himself. He goes, I wish I never had the chance to go for 60 because I wish we won that game in regulation and that mm-hmm. game didn't go to overtime. Of course, Fox wishes that. Sabonis has had triple-double after triple-double after triple-double in a loss where he goes, it doesn't matter, we lost the game. The players care about winning and losing. But the acknowledgement of history that's happening in front of us and keeping that in mind when making a vote or making a decision that could be the difference between literally hundreds of millions of dollars for De'Aaron Fox. He's going to be just fine without that, but that's his goal. Hundreds of millions of dollars is in the power of voters and not him when he's doing everything he can possibly do on the floor that, again, only two other players in history have done. But that's not enough because why? Because they lost the game against Minnesota. Oh, because the 49-point performance against Utah. At that point, like, kiss my ass. You don't deserve that responsibility.
You know what was funny about the Kobe Wilt thing was if you looked at the graphic closer, it was, you know, De'Aaron the last two nights, Kobe 20, whatever. Wilt Chamberlain 17 times.
Yeah. I got that too, and I was like, damn.
These Wilt stats are stupid.
Come on, man. This dude was an alien.
You know, he was playing with George and Jack.
Yeah, that didn't help too. That's where they invented the ball. Hand is part of the ball.
Hand is part of the ball. Yep.
It couldn't stop Wilt, so they. Yeah,
well, like De'Aaron said, hand is part of the ball when it's convenient.
Matt, when we had the whole, I guess it was the end of the San Antonio game, and we looked at the next seven games, six of the seven being at the Golden 1 Center. I think me and you were on the same page, saying I want 5-1. In those six games, 4-2 maybe. Did your outlook for what you were asking for, what you were hoping for, change due to the injuries, or did that not matter at all and you're kind of disappointed that the best they could do right now is 4-2?
I'm not going to be disappointed until 4-2 isn't possible, because 4-2 is bare minimum. Like 5-1 is the goal, 6-0 is fantastic. 5-1 the goal, 4-2 is the expectation. Like you have to just be over 500. You have to win a majority of your games at home. The context of who is playing and who isn't playing is important, but also the context of how those games ended is important. And you lost to Atlanta on a final play, and you lost to Minnesota in overtime. Winnable games, regardless of the circumstances, winnable games. That game against Minnesota, I could argue shouldn't have even gone to overtime in the first place. Why? Because Sacramento Kings couldn't have taken advantage of a 5-on-4 play where was it Naz Reid who came out of his shoe and wasn't even in the play. Mm-hmm. And the Kings also had, before that play, a couple of open looks up like 4 to make it a 6 or 7 point game to really put the pressure on Minnesota. They missed those shots. Mm. Opportunity was there in both those games for you to close those games out on your home floor. Yeah. And again, you look at the... We labeled like the clutch and closing out games as a strength of this Kings team, to a point where many people were saying, if the Kings can just hang around and keep it close, once it gets to the fourth quarter, that's where they can win a lot of games, right? G-Man put out the stat that seven Kings losses have been by a combined 14 points. I went through and looked at the roster looked at the schedule and I found 8 total games that I would consider close games. Like the finish was close at the end. Kings are 3-5 in those 8 games. So there's two ways to look at that. There's this team's getting a lot of experience in the clutch early as they go on. Hopefully that improves when you have two of the best and most clutch players in the league in Fox and DeRozan. And a couple of those close games, the Kings were without DeRozan. Maybe they would have looked differently. The other way of looking at that is, this is supposed to be your strength. You had 8 shots at it. You only won 3 of them. Mm-hmm. So you got to clean that up too, because this team has an addiction to close games, guys. I don't know what it is, but this team will let you keep it close or will come back and make it close. Mm-hmm. That's just the way this team plays. So they got to clean up those final moments and win those games like Atlanta and Minnesota.
Did you feel like the Kings were building a little, it's hard to say, momentum's probably the wrong word. You need more than one game. But I know I felt pretty good after the Phoenix game. Mm-hmm. And to lose DeMar going into the Minnesota game was pretty brutal. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you got, you know, the amazing, you know, De'Aaron Fox performance. But going against a Minnesota team that probably the makeup of it is pretty good. You know, they're still trying to find their legs, but they needed that win bad. Like, they had a losing streak going on right there. It's been difficult, Matt, to truly figure out. It's why your podcast, the title specifically, caught my attention so much. Was, you know, the best is still yet to come for Sacramento, because it feels like we keep trying to figure out what they are and get stuck in a holding pattern. Well, God, man, Malik is out. All right. They can sustain that this time. Like, this is not the end of last year. They can sustain that. Yeah, no, the guy who's going to help sustain, he's out too. And then it just became like one thing after another, and then, you know, no one saw Domas missing games. He doesn't even do that. And so it's just like we're stuck trying to figure out, like, I think the team is good. I need to see it a little bit more, but I still feel like the Sacramento Kings are good. I think they're better than their, if there is a such thing, I think they're better than their, is it 9-7 or 8-7 record?
I think it's clear that the Sacramento Kings are good, and what's promising is you can see how it can get better. It's not like, okay, the Kings are good right now and they're 8-7 and they're top 10 defensively and top 2 offensively. Like, you can see how this team can get better. They clean up things down the stretch. They play a little bit better defense in these spots. They start knocking down threes. They get a little more from the perimeter from Keegan Murray and guys consistently. They have a bench unit that has been bottom of the league, might still be around bottom of the league. That second unit has not been good to start this season. So there are areas where it makes more sense. I want to make sure I say this correctly. It feels like the areas that they struggle are less who they are and more, it makes more sense that they can improve, right? Sometimes you see ways that a team struggles, like when the Kings were 24th defensively, and you're like, yeah, that's just kind of who this team is. Mm-hmm. You look at the 3-point shooting, that's not who this roster is. You kidding me? Like, with the amount of shooters that this roster has, you mean to tell me that this team is going to be a bottom feeder 3-point shooting team this season? You look at the bench and the weapons that this Kings team has off their bench, especially when Malik Monk gets back. You mean to tell me this bench is second or third worst in the league? Like, maybe the 3-point defense, I can tell you, yeah, that's kind of who this team is because that's who they've been. Like, opponents are just going to shoot well from 3-point range or get a lot of looks from 3-point range. That I believe. Mm-hmm. But there's so many areas. Again, 3-5 in close games. Yeah. Do we really think that's who this team is? No, because they've got DeRozan, they've got Fox, and they've had a lot of success in the clutch in the past. So I think the areas that need improvement, it's believable that they will improve. Not, oh God, they need a miracle to suddenly get better at this, or they'll shock us like they did the second half of last year when they were top 10 in defensive rating to get that team to middle of the pack.
Yeah. No, that's same way I look at it. Both the same way both of you guys look at it. I'm anxious to see these guys with Sabonis, DeRozan, and eventually Monk, because I feel like they might be on the verge of kind of taking off a little bit, you know, going on a little bit of run, winning 7 out of 10 games or something like that, because of some of the things they were able to discover while they were out. Now you incorporate them, and I'm assuming that it gets incorporated seamlessly, but now you can shoot the 3-ball a little bit better. Now you do have Trey Lyles being effective, and you combine that with what we saw from DeRozan and then obviously what Sabonis brings to the table. And, yeah, I think they're going to go on a little stretch when they get everybody back.
So I'm looking at their next 20 games.
Oh. Matt's got them going 19-0.
No,
19-1.
The point is, out of your next 20 games, 13 of them are at home. You get healthy, you get right, that's your time. Right? You talk about winning 7 out of 10. You talk about getting hot and kind of turning around. Like, this is it. December, you have a long stretch where you're pretty much sleeping in your own bed every night. There is the stretch too, right? That they don't leave California for a good chunk of time. Like, hopefully they are healthy at this point, and this is that time to strike, right? You have a lot of home games coming up here over this next 20-game stretch, which is a big chunk of the season.
I want to say 10-3 in those 13 home games.
Come on, man.
That's what you need to be. That's what you need to be.
I'm not going to say record. I'm just going to say this is the time. This is it. And this team has proven that they can win on the road for some reason. At home, they've still been inconsistent. Mm. If you want to prove yourself, if you want to get right, this is the time. Mm. 13 of your next 20 games at home. Maybe more with the in-season tournament. We don't know those flex games yet.
Go 10-3 or Royale comes back.
I'm in. Bring Royale back.
9-4 and he comes back.
We had a theory, Matt, as we wrap up, that Fresh booked the kill off Royale because he's a wrestling fan. He was like, how can we book this? Well, we can't use an actual casket to bury him. Let's just throw him in a box and get rid of him.
I'm just upset we didn't see. Well, first, I'm upset that they got rid of Royale, period, because I think he's misunderstood. Number two is I'm mad that we didn't see how Slamson got him in the box. Like, Slamson, did you hit him as a stunner? Did you super kick him into the box? Like, how do we get there? Don't just cut to him being there. We got to see the conflict.
Well, it's the magic. You got to hide the magic. I'm assuming Slamson was Royale. Also.
What if they have?
I heard differently. I heard it was somebody else.
Yeah, I think it could have been somebody else. What if they had?
Could have had someone play him that day. That's for sure.
What if they had Royale with Black Tar coming down?
Papa Shango Slamson, we got to go. Make sure you check out Matt George's terrific podcast, Locked On Kings podcast, wherever you get podcasts from. Strongly recommend the video version right here on YouTube. And, of course, his great work over at ABC 10.